Welcome to the Odds Breakers, number one place for shared, sharp betting information.
Welcome back to Podcast 12 of 2021. I'm your host, Kiev O'Neill. You can follow me on Twitter at OBKiev, follow us at The Odds Breakers, and follow us on social media / The Odds Breakers. This episode is being brought to you by MyBookie.ag. For a 200% sign-up bonus, please visit MyBookie and use the promo code ODDS200. Terms and conditions apply. If you'd like to help us out with our costs and sponsor the website and the podcast, we'd love to help you out. Please visit theoddsbreakers.com, click shop, and become a member. For $24.99 a month, you can get my plays and premium plays before the line moves. If nothing else, please visit theoddsbreakers.com. Become a free picks newsletter subscriber. We have a great show for you today, my friends. Mr. Doug Upstone from Doc Sports is coming on to break down some college basketball for your weekend viewing pleasure. Also, we have a UFC event. I'm going to touch on that at the end. UFC did not work out so well last week. I mean, when you take some swings at dogs, you have to understand that you're going to lose more times than you win. Although the week before, when we swung with Benil Dariush, our biggest bet to premium subscribers, that worked out quite well. So bouncing back and forth with the UFC, hopefully this weekend will be a little bit more profitable, obviously, than last weekend. So a big trade just happened in the NFL. Carson Wentz was traded to the Indianapolis Colts from the Philadelphia Eagles. So it sounds like Wentz is going to go to the Colts in exchange for a 2021 third round pick and a conditional 2022 second round pick that could turn into a first if he does well. Well, here's the deal. I expect him to do well for the Colts. So they're probably going to have to give up a first round pick. Now, the reason he's going to do well is because I don't think it takes a great quarterback on that team in that division to get to the playoffs. I mean, Tennessee's pretty good. Their defense is very suspect, but the Colts are ready to win right now. So it sounds like they're sacrificing something, but at the same time, they have to do what they can to win now. They were a desperate team, right? There was nobody else on the market. Deshaun Watson was not there, according to Houston. They weren't going to trade him to a division rival, right? So, I mean, they did what they had to do, but I think this was kind of a fair trade for them taking a shot at this. If I'm them, I'm still drafting a quarterback maybe in the second or third round anyway. But they're pretty close, and they have a great offensive line out in Indianapolis. So at least what you do know is Carson Wentz is going to be very, very motivated. If you remember, his team absolutely sucked last year around him. So, you know, maybe he's better than what he showed last year. But I'm not sure if he's as good as he was when the Eagles were stacked a couple years back. So, you know, kind of weird that Goff and Wentz picks number one and two, I believe, of the, I think it was 2015 NFL draft. They happened to be gone from their teams. So interesting how the NFL works like that. There's no guarantees. Lots of teams are going more towards running quarterbacks. But as far as the Colts are concerned, they can breathe, right? Colts fans can now breathe a little bit that they have a quarterback. Some of them are pissed off, I'm sure. Some of them might be happy. But at the same time, there's really nothing else out there. So I like the trade. Before Doug comes on, we are going to do our normal college basketball regression spots, potential regression spots, and some of them actually came through pretty well last weekend. I bet a few myself. So obviously, this is just part of your handicap. We're going to look at teams that shot out of their minds that don't average a very high shooting percentage. Anything under 44% here. Last game, Alabama shot 64.3%, and they averaged 43.7%. They're a real buttoned-up team. Not sure if I'm going to go try to fade them, but they're a candidate. Hartford shot 58.3%, and they only shoot 42.3%. They're a candidate. Purdue, Indianapolis, 57.4%, and they averaged 42.5%. Eastern Kentucky shot 56.4%, and they averaged 43.6%. They're a candidate for regression. Boston University, 55%, and they averaged 43.2%. Very mad that I did not bet them against Holy Cross. That was a lean of mine. Sam Houston State, 53.8%. And they shot 42.8%. Houston, I didn't know that their field goal percentage was so low, shot 53.2%, and they only averaged 42.1%. Didn't know it was so low. They seemed to beat the heck out of a lot of teams. Let's go on the opposite side of it now. We're looking at teams that shot poorly that average at least 46%. Vermont only shot 35.6%, positive regression candidate. They averaged 46.6%. Next one, Villanova, that game against Creighton, shot 37.5%, and they averaged 46.1%. Interesting there. Florida only shot 37.7% against Arkansas, and you know they're on the COVID pause. They averaged 46.8%. Progression candidate right there. Loyola Chicago only shot 38.5% in that game. I believe it was against Valpo, and they averaged 50.3%. So there you go. Those are your candidates on that side. Next one is opponent three-point percentage. Last three games, opponents shot out of their minds, and they have a very good average. Illinois-Chicago, opponents shot 50%, and they average their defense 30.6%. You have Sacramento State, 47.1% opponents shot the last three games, and they average 34.6%. UCLA, opponents shot 46.4% from three, and their defense averages 34.2%. Indiana State, opponents shot 45.5% and they averaged 33%. San Francisco opponents shot 44.9% and they average on defense 30.9%. LaSalle opponents shot 44.8% last three games and their defense average is 32.1%. All right, last three games of opponent free throw. Who's getting pelted with free throws? Basically, the teams over 85% are Syracuse, Virginia Tech, Purdue Fort Wayne, Vanderbilt, Utah Valley State, Tennessee, North Dakota, Delaware State, Weber State, South Dakota State, Coppin State, Lehigh at 90%, Bowling Green team shot 90%, Northwestern State team shot 90.9%, and poor Montana State teams their last three games shot 91.8% from the free throw line. All right, for the last segment, we're going to go teams, how well they perform away from home with respect to what they do at home. This is away or neutral. The top teams right now are UMass, Wright State, Bowling Green, Cal State Fullerton, California Riverside, San Diego State, Hawaii, Morgan State, Boston University, Binghamton. And the worst teams are Pacific, somehow pulled their way above Minnesota, Texas A&M, St. Louis, Wisconsin, Michigan, and Florida State is the next one, Abilene Christian, Monmouth, and Louisville. These teams are horrible when they go on the road.
Unreal.
All right. Now let's get into our guest and some games for this weekend, Mr. Doug Upstone from Doc Sports. All right. And now I am very excited to welcome back a highly decorated professional handicapper and true friend of the Oddsbreakers, Mr. Doug Upstone from Doc Sports. .com. You can follow him on Twitter at Doug Upstone. Doug, man, how you doing? It's starting to, well, warm up in down out here west, but looks like it's still pretty cold out east, isn't it?
And in the South and pretty much everywhere else in the world, it's insane. You know what's been going on this week. East of where we live, and so it's just been crazy. But yes, we're everybody else is suffering and dying, and not, well, I shouldn't say dying, but everybody else is suffering and having a hard time. And we're looking at 80 some degrees in the forecast, and spring training starts, Kev. So we got that going for us. It's wonderful.
Oh, it's wonderful. Cannot wait to check out some spring training games, Doug, man. How's your 2021 treating you so far?
Well, in terms of the life itself is good, but besides that, what we're really here to talk about is sports betting, and in particular, college basketball has been on a really nice run lately. The last 8 days, 10-4, 71.4%, up a little over 2,000 based on units, and you know, the one of the things that, for whatever reason, I've always been like this, you know. Of course, I have my big plays and stuff like that, and, you know, win plenty of those, everything else. But when I get going in certain seasons, I do really well at certain levels. And how Docs does it, they have what they call, you know, they have plays once 1 to 8 units, and their mid-level plays essentially are the 4 to 5s. And if 4 to 5 unit plays so far in college basketball, 30-16, up over 5,500. It's just been crazy good. And so I'm just, just trying to keep that rolling and, you know, just go along with it. Honestly, you know, and this is what, and I know, like, when you talk with your pal Kyle Hunter there, a lot of honesty, a lot of full disclosure. I'm exactly the same way. NBA has been up and down. I'm making some adjustments to try and fix that right now. NHL, won 3 of the last 4 days, 60% the last, I think about 3 weeks. So that's been good. And then golf, which I know we're going to talk about.
Yeah, man, new sport here to talk about in the Odds Breakers. Well, we touched on it before, but it's golf season here, and you're great at it. I love watching it. I guess on Saturdays, I focus on the Saturday and Sunday more towards the end, but I like to take my long shots, you know, and then possibly reevaluate on Friday, Saturday. So why don't you go into a little bit of golf and how our listeners can play it or benefit from it?
Sure. And, you know, I've been a big proponent of golf for a long time. I spent, actually, not everybody would know this, but I spent over 20 years in the golf business on the retail side and also running a 5-store chain back in the Midwest. And in terms of, you know, knowledge, everything that has to do with just golf in general, in terms of equipment, the attitudes and everything of professional golfers, how they think, anything like that. Known it for years, and back in those days, there was not the access, you know, to what there is today, okay, in terms of, you know, a full card of different things that you can bet. Back of, I mean, pretty much a lot of the betting I did in my early days was the games that I ran and with friends and stuff like that, and guys I knew at the various country clubs. And so, yeah, so it was a lot of fun back in those days doing those types of things. But today, everything is just wide open. You have more betting options than ever. At Docs, they have two ways that they do it, and you can do it, you know, and I'll explain both, but essentially, they either want you to do tournament golf or they want you to do daily. And because I'm better at tournament golf, I'd stick with that. So the things I focus in on are, you know, who to win or finishing in top 5, top 10, top 20, along with some head-to-head for the tournament basis. Otherwise, of course, as I just mentioned, you can do daily head-to-head. Plus, there's a myriad of other options. Now, I'll make this brief and quick as I can here. For tournament golf, what are the keys to doing it? Okay, you have to do your research, plain and simple. That's just 101 with any sports betting in general. But you have to know the course. You have to know what players play well at certain courses and which ones don't. You have to know, then going into what course, golfer does it favor? Does it favor big hitters? Okay, your Bryson DeChambeau's or iron players who can hit it tight to the pins, like you have to do here at the Phoenix Open that was just here a couple weeks ago, or guys that are, you know, really good scramblers who are adept around the greens, who can, you know, get out of trouble, who can chip really close to pins. Okay, those are all important things. And of course, you have to know recent performances. That's very important, because if a guy's hot, okay, and he runs into the right situation at a particular golf course, okay, he's going to be in great shape there. And of course, you have to know how to putt. So with at this level, then what you really want to know from a sports betting standpoint, what putters are the best from 4 to 12 feet, because that's where it's going to be. So you're going to make your long putts, okay, from time to time. That's going to happen for anybody. But those that make the 4 to 12 footers, those are the ones that are going to give you a best chance to cash. Now, as opposed to you saying you're a long shot guy, I'm not, okay? I try to just pound out winners weekly, grind away just like a professional golfer does, grind away, and I'm more than happy to build a bankroll using shorter numbers, and I continue to do that, and in fact, I've won each of the last 3 weeks, okay? Made a profit of a little over $1,200 doing that, so that's what the plan is, again, going into this week for the Genesis Invitational, and of course, going down the road.
So more of a matchup type perspective?
I do some matchups. Now, actually, personally, now this is away from Docs, I do some head-to-head matchup stuff. Yes, for sure I do. But my primary focus, as I said, is I look for individual players, specifically top fives, top tens, and top 20s, okay, for finishes. And the other benefit of that, especially on top 20s, is that all ties go in. So, I mean, you could literally have a tie for 20th place could involve 10 golfers. Mm-hmm. Okay. So technically your guy could make a birdie on the 72nd hole he played, get into, let's just say 10 under, and that 10 under turns out it's tied for 20th. You win.
Yeah. Yeah. Very true. So that's the perspective, you know, finishing in a threshold, and that's great stuff. And that's the way I don't play it, but I don't professionally handicap it. I just bet it personally. One of the strategies, take your long shots early and then relook at it on Saturday, for example, or on Friday, because maybe some of those favorites are down a little bit. You're going to get a little bit better of a number on them, and they come up and win it anyway. So I haven't really tracked it that well, but I've heard some good stuff, and I've won a few of them that way, so I like that.
And to your point about, you know, some head-to-head action, I mean, a great thing to look for, especially on Fridays and Saturdays after the rounds have been completed, look for guys that either had really hot rounds or really poor rounds, especially if they're, let's just say, above average players, and find the right matchup, because invariably the better players bounce back, okay, after a hot round. Or for example, it was Jordan Spieth here. He shot 61, I think, on Saturday, and you know, and he had the lead going in on Sunday, and he was play against material for me, and it came through because he didn't play nearly as well on Sunday. Perfect example.
Okay, that is a great example. So if somebody's all of a sudden just shoots a round out of their mind, right? Maybe maybe their value is going to be a little higher. Well, to the line's going to be higher, I should say, but the value's on the other player possibly.
Without a doubt. Yep.
All right.
That's how you do it.
Well, there you go. Great advice for this golf season. Good stuff. Let's get into a little college basketball then. And Doug, I'm curious, who is your, well, top five, I would say. You can even go top six if you want in college basketball right now.
Well, the first two you're going to be absolutely shocked about, Kiev. I guarantee you. Gonzaga and Baylor.
Yeah, shocking, right? Well, which order? Gonzaga first, then Baylor?
I'm going with Gonzaga first, yes. I am right now. Once we get into the tournament, that opinion could change. I mean, and to be honest with you, I'm pretty much 1 and 1A on those two. I mean, I can go either way. The thing that I like about Baylor a lot is their defense. Now, I'm not saying Gonzaga doesn't play good defense, but, you know, they don't have the athletes that Baylor does. But, you know, in either case, I don't think there's much to choose from. And to be perfectly honest, all I can hope is, or we can all hope, I think, is that that's who your finalists are. I mean, because that would be the all, you know, because we were deprived of them playing back in December. So it'd be great if we can get that rematch, you know, in the championship game. But beyond them, okay, now this is just my opinion. I like Florida State third. I like Michigan fourth. And I like Alabama fifth. To me, all five of these teams have very specific skills, and their weaknesses are not particularly noticeable. They have great size. They have excellent depth. They have super length on defense, so you know they can switch out if they want to, or if they play zone, they have such length that they can get up on any shooter. And the other thing I really like about all of these teams is they can go on 10-0 runs in a 2 or 3 minute span and just take a close game and start to widen it out.
Great points there. And that's true. They can. That's the great makeup of a tournament type team is to do that. Tournaments also favor teams that run the ball and can score the ball. You know, you've seen the Dukes get high before in the tournaments and some other teams. I'm going to go with obviously the same top two as you. Unfortunately, Baylor's been in COVID protocol, but I mean, this question's more for both teams being, you know, healthy and practiced, right?
Right. So, absolutely.
So I'm going to go Baylor then Gonzaga, and I agree that they're 1A and 1B, really. I mean, both these teams, in my opinion, I don't think they're beatable personally. I think in a lot of the brackets that I fill out, it's going to be one or the other there. I might get cute later with a Michigan or Villanova or something, but we'll see how the bracket looks and what kind of matchups are actually happening within the bracket, because that's important to me. You know, the matchups sometimes can upset some teams that have some certain weaknesses. So we'll take a look at that later, of course. But number three, I have Michigan. I know Michigan's coming off that COVID pause, but, you know, I still think they're very well put together. And, wow, they have a much better team than I thought. Livers is a great leader in that team. And I think that Juwan Howard's doing fantastic there. So I got Michigan. I have Houston number four. And number five, there's a bunch of teams I can put there. But I'm going to say USC. And I'm just getting cute here, but Evan Mobley has been an absolute beast for UFC. The dude's tall, very tall. And if you look at the whole team, they're all tall. They're fast, and they've just been pounding the Pac-12 lately. In my opinion, USC has a great chance this year. And they're a little bit under the radar because the Pac-12 gets so much, let's just say crap from people, right? They're looked at as being overrated or just one of the lesser of the Power 5 conferences. In my opinion, USC could be a dangerous team, Doug.
You know, I don't know if this happened, but I'm not sure if I sent you my notes that we're talking about. But you know, you pretty much took them verbatim.
Well, there you go.
Because one of the teams that I think that's one of the most undervalued teams, okay, in all of college basketball is USC. Okay, they passed the eyeball test. Yes, you have to take into consideration that the Pac-12 is not particularly strong. But as you mentioned, you know, their length is incredible. I think they're averaging 11 or 12 offensive rebounds a game. So they just devastate teams on the glass. Defensively, they're very skilled. You know, their offense is a little, you know, they have, let's say, they have droughts that make you less comfortable about them potentially playing better teams. But, you know, to get to a Sweet 16, okay, to an Elite Eight, I can't say that I would be surprised at this time.
No, I wouldn't either. Absolutely not. And they haven't had really that bad of a game since Oregon State was a bad look. But, I mean, every team falls asleep. You know, you see it happen. Obviously, Gonzaga and Baylor, they're the exception so far, but it really does happen. You've seen Michigan get destroyed by Minnesota one game. You know, you've seen Villanova just last weekend shoot 34% against Creighton. It happens. And so I 100% agree. I'm glad that you agree with that, because USC is a nice sneaky little look at 50-1 right now, too, in some books, if you want to get cute. So there you go. With our top five, who's an under the radar team that you like that could make some noise? Well, first, I guess make the tournament, but could make some noise in the tournament.
Yeah, you know, I don't know what your feelings are, and you can tell me here in a second, but it's just, you know, there seems to be like maybe 10 teams that really look like they're at least Elite Eight. You know, capable, and to say is, I can't say if I really feel strongly about anybody that's really what I call true under the radar team, but there's a number of teams that are playing in tough conferences that have acquired some losses, but they're still really good. Okay, and for example, Texas Tech, you know, they have two guys and maybe three that are going to play in the NBA. And, you know, they do have some weak spots on their team also, but they're extremely well coached. They play, you know, pretty much really good defense. And honestly, other than Baylor and Gonzaga, I think Texas Tech can beat anybody in the country on a given day. You know, I think from the talent standpoint, they're that good. So I like them, okay, to go deep into the tournament. I like your Houston Cougars pick, okay? They play just, I mean, their defense is just suffocating. I mean, and talk about a team that can go on runs. I mean, they're so adept at running off of missed shots and or turnovers and turning those into immediate points. I mean, that's a great quality to have. Now, their offensive sets in the half court, not always the best, but, you know, they're tough. Oklahoma, I'll tell you what, I would not want to play Oklahoma under any circumstance. I don't care what team you want to pick, okay? I mean, they have all the same characteristics of the top five teams, whether they be yours or mine. I just think they're an awesome team. And, you know, they never beat themselves. Lon Kruger is a fantastic coach. I would not want to be matched up against them. Here's one that's a little more under the radar in the big picture, which is Belmont. Okay, this team for years now has had a tremendous offense. Okay, and they have great diversity. They can knock down threes, but then they also run their execution on their ability to get open two looks and then also backdoor cuts. I mean, they just carve teams up. I believe they're 16-0 and 12-3-1 in the Ohio Valley. And for those that don't know, the Ohio Valley is at its strongest point in years. I mean, typically since Belmont joined, it was Belmont, Murray State, Austin Peay. Well, now there's six teams, okay, that have really good records. I'm not saying the Ohio Valley is better than, you know, the Big Ten or anything like that. I'm just saying, for how good this conference, how good it is this year, it's loaded with a lot of talent, and Belmont is at the top of the class by quite a bit. I'd be surprised if they don't make the Sweet 16, to tell you the truth, Kiev.
Oh, big statement, and they haven't really played a top 100 team, but you're right, they do blow out a lot of teams. Nick Muzinski there is fantastic. Great player, 6'11". He's kind of the guy that brings it together for this Belmont team, but they shoot well. Effective field goal percentage, 59.3. So I love the Belmont pick right there. And, you know, there's probably some good odds on them. St. Louis is one that I was going to go with because there's more of a buying point on them now that they came off a COVID pause and had two really bad losses. But now they're starting to fire again. You know, they played LaSalle and got their revenge. They beat up Fordham really bad. They beat Rhode Island at home. And, you know, they're kind of coming back in the form. We can't forget this St. Louis team beat LSU. You know, they beat them pretty well. And then they beat NC State. And NC State's not as good as a team as we thought, but still ACC team. You know, so they did some of the work. So right now they're definitely an at-large team. If they go somewhat deep in their tournament, I think they make it. I mean, on KenPom, they're 35th, right? And I'd rather see St. Louis in than like a, well, let's just think a middle of the road ACC team.
It's pretty much all of them.
Okay. Like a Pittsburgh or a Wake Forest for sure. You know, maybe Notre Dame even. I want St. Louis in above those teams. So St. Louis probably going to get a ton of value, but I don't know if they go all the way, but they could get to the Sweet 16 for sure.
Yeah, you know, the other thing too, to your point, I mean, the A-10, there's a lot of good teams in there. They're not necessarily great teams, but, you know, I mean, VCU, Virginia Commonwealth, Richmond, St. Bonaventure's been one of my favorite teams, you know, to follow all year. And, you know, there's some real talent there. And St. Louis would be in that discussion, but like you said, they were out, 3 weeks, I think it was, missed a ton of games. And so, you know, talent-wise, they were right there to run with all of those. Then that long break hurt them, but, you know, and then those two losses then, you know, kind of depreciated them in the big picture. But if, you know, if they can get to the finals of the A-10, you know, I mean, winning it would be better, of course, but if they can get to the finals and they keep winning the way they are right now, I don't know how you hold them out.
All right. Well, there you go. We got a couple hot ones for you guys. So hopefully they come into fruition and they at least make the tournament and give you an opportunity to hedge and make a little bit of money. Let's get on to some big games, Doug. Friday, We have Toledo versus Buffalo, and we're just going to kind of project the lines. We can use KenPom, Bart Torvik, just power ratings. It's not hard to do that. So I'm going to go Buffalo is going to be around a pick 'em against Toledo, and I'm going to go with a total about 159. Why don't you get started on this one?
Sure. You know, Toledo has been at the top of the conference the entire season. They recently lost a couple of games, and they let Akron and Kent State back in the MAC chase. But you know, offensively, they're sharp. Where they lost their way a little bit, they, you know, and what they did is they let one loss turn into two, and which, you know, is not uncommon in college basketball, but, you know, it happens. But you know what? They're you know, offensively, they score well. They do a lot of things in terms of ball movement that are sharp, and then if you know if their focus is good, they're tough. But Buffalo, you know what? Buffalo's not the same team as when Nate Oates was the coach. And but for those that don't know, Nate Oates is now the Alabama coach, so it's not a coincidence they're playing so well. They're still very good, and they have started to play better, especially on defense. Okay, and that to me, that's kind of the big key for them, because they'll score enough points. I think this game. Well, I mean, the point spread is telling us, but I think, you know, this game is going to come down to the wire and it be a 2-point game either way. And if you can, and if it turns out that Buffalo is an underdog at home, I'll take the points.
Hey man, I certainly will too. And I would consider taking them all the way up to 3. You know, this is going to be a fun game because you're going to have some very fast pace. It's in Buffalo. They're going to control the pace. Fourth in the nation at average possession ranked 120, 100. Well, their actual, possession length is 14.5. That's it. I'm typoed here. I put like 24.5. Toledo ranks 151st at 17 seconds, but they play a little faster in MAC play, 16.6 seconds per possession. So neither defense is all that good. Buffalo's has improved a little bit, but still ranking 101st on KenPom's. Toledo's ranking 168th. Toledo has the edge on offense over Buffalo, 54.1 effective field goal percentage, Buffalo 51.5 effective field goal, but Buffalo's been trending up. That's what I like. The kind of like, what have you done for me lately thing. No losses this February. Toledo has lost two of their last three games. When I look at how both these guys match up, I think Buffalo has the edge. Toledo relies on the three-pointer, right? They shoot 46% of the time they're shooting a three. I believe that's like top 15 out of 350 basketball teams, right? Well, they should be shooting a lot because they make a decent amount of them, 38% of the time, pretty high. They're making a three-pointer of their three-point shots. But Buffalo, their defense, they rank fourth in defending the three. They only allow 26.4% to go in. Now, I got to think some of that's because of the MAC competition's not that good and they miss threes anyway. But still, fourth in the nation, 26.4. That tells me they can guard the high perimeter there up in three-point land. So because of that edge, I like the Bulls here, especially at home, trending up. So I'm going to take them. I mean, my pure numbers has it 83-81, but I'll take this thing, like you said, at pick 'em at -1, -2. Hopefully we'll get a dog and make it a little bit easier on them. A couple other sites, Bart Torvik has them winning 81-79. Haslametrics has it 80-76. So I think we're on the same page there, Doug.
Yep, I would agree.
Let's move on to Saturday then. Big game, UConn versus Nova. Nova's going to be around a -6-ish point spread, total 140. I'll quickly mention this one first. I was on Providence against UConn last game, and I was flat out wrong. I didn't know that Boo Knight's going to come back. He did, and he was amazing. Shot over 50%. He scored 18 points. You know, and he didn't even play like a ton of minutes. So he kind of came in there and just owned Providence. But, UConn has everything as a team to make some noise as well. And now they have their best score back. And he only played the first six games. And they did fantastic in the beginning of this season. Villanova, though, fifth most efficient offense in the league, 121.9 adjusted efficiency. Their defense has been struggling as of late, though. They allowed that 86 to Creighton, 74 to Georgetown recently. But I'm not sure if I want to poke the bear and go against Jay Wright at home here. I mean, you know, UConn's got a lot of upside for the rest of the year, I will mention, but I'm not sure about this spot. Here's the thing. There's no way this spread's going to be in between past seven, right? If it's past seven, I have to start thinking UConn, but I mean, obviously if it's at three, I'd definitely bet you Villanova. Do you have any thoughts on this one?
Absolutely. You're right about, you know, UConn is a much better team, you know, with their star player back. But Villanova, you know, their offense is so diverse. Again, you know, they run the sets that they run are just, they're fantastic. They're one thing to watch for, and the announcers will bring this up, is the amount of ball fakes that they do. Okay. I mean, it's just, you know, that and head and shoulder fakes then too. It's like every single time they have the ball, they do that. They draw a lot of fouls then because of that. And so they're just so adept at that. You know, they're number five in the country in offensive efficiency. The Huskies, they're 79th. Now, are they better with their best player? Of course they are. Connecticut's defense, I think, is good, okay? And I think they can hang in this game for 30 minutes or so. But Jay Wright, this team, as opposed to some other Villanova teams, bring up one other thing that you mentioned. But this club, they don't beat you like other Villanova teams of the past, because they don't have a real presence in the center, both offense or defense. And in the games that you mentioned against Georgetown that they struggled, and against Creighton, they had no answers in the pivot, okay, to stop the opposing center. That's where their downfall is, and that's where their downfall will eventually come from. That's why I don't like them to necessarily make the Sweet 16. The thing, though, that this Villanova team does, they kind of beat you with a bunch of paper cuts, okay? So what I mean by that, they go 6-3 run, a 7-4 run, and a 9-5 run over about a 12 or 13-minute span, and all of a sudden you're down 10, and you don't even feel like you should be tied, okay? That's just kind of how this team plays. So in this one, I agree with you, if you can catch Villanova at -6 or less, that's the play.
All right, so there you go. We're kind of on the same page where it comes to there's a middle part where you want to stay away from. Yeah, no, that makes total sense. And I'm excited for the Big East here. I'm curious to see how many teams are going to make the tournament. Marquette had a nice win. They have a lot more work to do if they're going to get in. So does Seton Hall. But I see UConn getting in right now. Definitely Villanova, Creighton. And that's only three sure ones I have. You know, the other ones.
Even Connecticut, I think, is a reach unless they just, you know, steam it up at the end of the season here.
Well, yes, but they do have a win against USC. And so that's going to help. It was on a neutral court. It was way back on December 3rd.
Yeah.
But they have to count that. And USC is ranked number 12. So I think
that. So you're saying that you're depending on the committee to do what they say they're going to do.
I know. Okay. That's more of a tougher bet than anything, isn't it?
So, all right. Go ahead.
Let's move on to the next one then, buddy. Huge game here, Illinois versus Minnesota. Minnesota +5 total on this is going to be around 148. And I'll start here. I'm a Big Ten kind of guy. Well, this is, I mean, Minnesota, right? The whole thing about them, home road splits, right? And we've been making some money off them. I do admit that I did take Minnesota finally in a spot yesterday, and I think I hedged back a little bit at halftime yesterday against Indiana. In Minnesota, in all honesty, that road game wasn't as much their fault. They did play good defense, but Indiana just couldn't miss. They shot 58% yesterday from the field, and Minnesota was about 3 points from covering it. So we'll say that, but you're going to see some money on Minnesota this game because everyone knows how good they play at the barn. You know, 44% is where they shoot at home, scoring an average of 80.6 per game. And I always have to say that's a little skewed because of the easy teams they played in the beginning of the season. People have to think about that. Illinois is, they're a top three team, in my opinion, Illinois. And I just think that they have a little deficiency at forwards. I think Cockburn's the best center in the league as of right now. Obviously, Michigan with that, young freshman that they have. I keep forgetting his name. Dickinson, Hunter Dickinson. He's probably the next best for sure. But, you know, they have some trouble at forwards, and but their guards play really well. Illinois, they still like to play pretty fast. You know, they like to run it up and down the court. And I think there's going to be an opportunity for them to run up and down the court this game here. I don't think I want to go against Minnesota at home. Illinois, their last two road games were overtime games. One was against Indiana, and one was against Nebraska. What the heck was that? Like, you know, allowing yourself. Now, Nebraska was a desperate team. But, you know, at the same time, I have to lean Minnesota here if the spread is around 5 or more. But I would wonder if the total in this game is going to be in play, because I think that Illinois is going to win this game and they're going to score over 75 points. I have the game 79-75. People are pounding Big Ten unders, and they should be right when they come out, but they're starting to get a little overbought. And I wonder if this is one of those high flying games. So I'm going to look towards the over, and I think it's going to be about 154 points.
Okay, and this one, you know, I mean, you know, like as you said, I mean, if there was a team photo of Minnesota, it would be the pictures of Jekyll and Hyde, okay, for sure on that. I mean, it's just what they've done, you know, all season long. 13-1 at home, 11-3 against the spread. Okay, I mean this has been their MO though for years, you know, and you can go back probably 20 years. They're just decidedly that much worse this season on the road. Now Illinois is more than capable of winning and covering against the Golden Gophers, okay, in my opinion. But the one thing this team really struggles at is that they have some mental dull spots in almost every game. You mentioned the Nebraska game, okay, at Lincoln. They didn't come to play, okay? They fell down early, okay? And that's happened a few different times this season. And now, to their credit, they overcome it because of the talent that they have. And the other thing that they have done that they were not doing early in the year, now they're winning close games, okay? Early in the year, they were losing close games. So they've kind of gotten over that barrier. They have two absolutely, you know, NBA-ready players in Cockburn and Asumo. So, I mean, those guys are good. And, you know, Frazier's a nice scorer for them. And they have some nice components, you know, to go along with this. For me, you know, I to be honest with you, this is one I could go either way on the side, okay, to be perfectly honest. You know, especially if it's 5, I could see Illinois winning by 3 or 4. And I could also see them winning by 7, you know, if that's the case, if they make a couple of free throws late. I think it's going to be really tight. I'm going to say, though, I'm going to go with Illinois because of their defense, and that's the thing I like from on the presumption, and this is and is being presumptive by me, by the way, to assume that they're going to, you know, bring the mental aspect of the game in this one. I'll say that. I'm going to say, though, I'm going to go against you. I'm not going to go against you. I'm just going to say that I think the 148, if that's correct, I think that's a pretty good number. Okay, so I'm going to say that I wouldn't have a strong opinion on the total on that one myself.
All right. Well, thanks for being honest. I appreciate that for sure. And, you know, that's what's most important. It's we always go to head-to-head every once in a while, and it should be like that.
Absolutely.
Let's see if we go head-to-head on this one. Virginia versus Duke, and this game's a huge game in the ACC. Duke's been playing desperate, and they've been showing it. Virginia coming off a stinker. I mean, well, I'm not sure if it was a stinker. They just got their butts kicked by Florida State, but I have this game closer to a pick 'em now because of Duke's last two performances. What are your thoughts on this? And I have the total about 132.
Yeah, you know what? My opinion on this, I don't think this is going to be any contest at all. I think Duke's going to get it handed to him in this one. Yes, they have looked better the last couple of games, but you know the freshman that from Milwaukee that opted out. I mean, he's a talented player, and you know, subtracting someone like that, okay, I don't think it certainly doesn't enhance your team. That's for sure. And, you know, they've beaten some weaker teams. Yes, they've shown a little more mental toughness. I mean, this to me is, in terms of maturity, this is the most immature team from Duke that I can ever remember seeing since they have decided to go the route of, you know, of recruiting freshmen. And immature, not just in the sense that when things don't go their way, they react poorly to them. Okay. And for example, against Notre Dame, I mean, they played no defense against Notre Dame because Notre Dame doesn't play any defense themselves. So they're horrible defensively. And Duke just got into that type of game of just, you know, basically like a, you know, an outdoor Y or a Y ball game, you know, just up and down. And so, yeah, they've shown some, just say, some more defensive acumen the last couple of games, but against pretty mediocre competition, I think. Virginia, you know, they ran into the wrong team at the wrong time. Okay, at Florida State. I think Florida State is better than them, and I think it's just a bad matchup for them because they don't match up. But in this game, they defensively, coming off such a poor performance, Tony Bennett teams typically rebound quite well in this one. I know it's going to be on the road, but I think in this case, that'll fortify Virginia's desire in this one. I think they'll tighten up the defense on there. They're going to, you know, they'll grab the rebounds, which causes Duke a lot of frustrations because they're not a very good rebounding team. I'm going to say the Wahoos by double digits.
All right. Wow. Double digits. This is a big play then for Doug, it looks like. I love it. I love it. That's what I want to hear. Unfortunately, though, Doug, we're not going to have disagreement because I agree with you 100%. Duke, man, yeah, and this is the spot to fade them. You know, I know they're coming home, but Cameron Indoor is not the same place unless it's loaded with fans, and Virginia knows that too. Something clicked with Duke, of course, and I think the whole Jalen Johnson deal from Sun Prairie, Illinois, or Wisconsin, is a good thing because it was good for Duke, and it gave them the spark. They're like, okay, we're going to come together, forget the five-star guy, and they did. They came together. They beat the heck out of NC State. They really beat up Wake Forest, shooting 54% against them, 50% from three against NC State. So, you know, their last two games, but they're stepping up in competition for sure. And Virginia, they're woken up. The sleeping giant has awoken from that bad loss against Florida State. One thing I know about Bennett teams, they don't like to lose two in a row. So I think Virginia definitely is going to show their defense here. And this is kind of how if they match up here. Duke, they rank fourth in the conference at effective field goal percentage. That's great, 54.3%. But Virginia ranks second, 54.6%. Duke ranks 10th in the conference in defensive efficiency. That's not good. 105.2% adjusted efficiency on KenPom. Virginia ranks second, 97.6%. Now, Duke is the better rebounding team, and I'll give them that. And I think it's because they hang around a lot when they're shooting, and they get better offensive rebounds because of it. But they don't get back on defense because of it. 36 boards to 31.5 boards per game is what they average. But Virginia, when it comes to assist-to-turnover ratio, 1.5 to Duke's 1.2. And there you go. Duke's a sloppy team, and they get sloppy when they play against great defense. They freeze up a little bit, right? Free throws are also a little bit of a crutch for them. 71% to Virginia's 79%. So this is going to be a great game to watch. But I agree that Virginia is going to win by a little bit of margin. Just from a pure numbers, I have it by 67 to 64. But I think there's a lot of upside to Virginia. I'm going to take them for a few stars as well, Doug. Any final thoughts?
Yep. No, I mean, there you go. I mean, I'm having a hard time imagining that Duke is just going to compete, you know, I mean, with a more mature veteran team. I just don't see it happening.
All right. Well, we're on consensus there. Let's get on to our last game to talk about here. Michigan versus Ohio State. And I have Ohio State a minus one-ish, and I have the total about 143. Now, unfortunately, these two teams play tonight. So you're getting kind of a perspective before we see what happens. So the only thing I want to say is Michigan, that win against Wisconsin, they should have lost that game because they played bad. You know, they start out that game terrible. They were missing everything. But Wisconsin, you know, the second half, they crumbled. The officials were giving some fouls to Michigan, and then Wisconsin can capitalize when the opportunity at the end. They were just holding the ball, shooting threes. They kind of just cowered. You know, they cowered down to a tough defense like Michigan. They shriveled up. But Michigan, they are that team. They are probably the best and most complete team in the Big Ten. And what I will say is that Hunter Dickinson guy is a matchup nightmare for anybody. So I really like EJ Liddell for Ohio State. And Ohio State's been shooting a little bit out of their minds this whole year. And I think that they're going to demand some respect here, and they're going to be at home. This is going to be a very big game for Ohio State, but I think Michigan shows up. And so I'm going to pick Michigan to win it, but I'm not like, until I see what happens tonight, I can't give out any plays, of course. So what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think for in the Big Ten, this is a benchmark game for both teams. Okay, if Michigan can go on the road and win another game like this one, okay, they prove, at least in my mind, that they are the best team in the conference. I really like Illinois, but I think if they win this one, I think that establishes the fact the Wolverines are the best team. If Ohio State wins, that justifies their high ranking that they currently have in the polls currently, and it makes the Big Ten a three-team race going forward. Both of teams are extremely effective on offense. I mean, in terms of not only ball movement, but it's the type of shots they end up getting, and their passing, different sets that they run. I really like to watch both teams play. The difference, though, for me is that Michigan is a top-shelf defensive team. To me, they're one of the best in the country defensively that I've seen. Offhand, this might be a little off course here, but other than Baylor, at least visually to me, I think that Michigan is the best defensive team. It's not taken away from the Buckeyes. They are quite good defensively, but I think that just from this standpoint, that Michigan is better. Both coaches are very good. They have strong staffs, and they have found ways to improve their teams, and they're able to make quick and immediate adjustments that the players respond to, which I think is very important. This should be, to borrow from Dick Vitale, this should be a dynamite game. But in the end, I think Michigan has a little bit more, and I think they'll end up winning the game, maybe say by 3 points. So if the line is 1 point either way, I'm going to take Michigan in either case.
All right. We're on the same side again. So there you go. Fantastic stuff, Doug. Any other games you want to throw out there that we might have missed?
Well, there was one I was thinking of, but just before we started this, Florida State and Virginia Tech gone.
Oh, so, COVID.
So that's fine. No, it's just that's the era that we live in. So but no, I mean, you know, there's some other games, but you know, like Texas, West Virginia, but you know, I think that's been kind of beaten to death on both teams. We know plenty about both. Should be an interesting game, but in terms of it, you know, just a deep discussion, I'd much rather talk about Michigan, Ohio State for another half an hour than talk about Texas and West Virginia, to be perfectly honest.
West Virginia killed me last weekend. So when they were up by two with 40 seconds left and they missed those two free throws, I knew my -2.5 was gone. Yeah, just at that moment, I knew it was gone. And then guess what? They go to two overtimes and Oklahoma ends up beating them. So there you go with West Virginia. They're on my shit list. So so the hell with them. But anyways, more importantly, we don't have to talk about the games, but where can the listeners find your great information? I mean, you're on a fantastic run and potential plays for the weekend.
Okay, so real simple. It's Dax Sports. Okay, that's DaxSports.com. My name is Doug Upstone, and the last name is just like it sounds, just phonetically. So it's real easy. I'm there. You can check everything out there. As you mentioned, yes, college basketball recently has been very, very good to me, and see if we can knock down some more winners. It's a little early for big plays, but I got a couple games that I circled earlier in the week, so I'm just watching how the games progress. So I definitely will have some big plays this weekend, and again, as I mentioned earlier, for me, though, it's not just about the big plays. It's about the entire card. And one of the benefits of Dax is that you pay $30, whether it's for the one play or for the whole card. Okay. So if I have seven plays on a Saturday, guess what? You get all seven plays for $30. So that's the real advantage of that. I wish I could get enough lines on the NHL. I'm going to start looking more for NHL games just for regular time only. Skip the overtime. I've had enough overtime losses. Well, in fact, that'll be, I don't know if I mentioned this to you, on my tombstone, I'm going to have like a, you know, the message boards that, used to see in sports bars. Okay. The message, I'm going to have that. It's going to say he would have lived longer if not for overtime.
Overtime, the killer of all of us sports bettors, my man, especially, you know, when you're on a dog or when you're on the under. Oh my God. Yeah. And we're probably in general trying to find more spots when it comes to unders and dogs, just in general, because the public likes the favorites and, you know, we tend to find value, and that's why we hate overtime so much, isn't it?
You got that right.
All right, Doug, thanks so much for coming on, my man. You're one of the most fantastic handicappers that I know. Have a great rest of your week.
Absolutely, Kia. The pleasure is all mine to be on.
All right, everyone, make sure you check out Doug over at DocSports.com. Tell him the Oddsbreakers sent you. It's time for a little UFC Fight Night 185. Curtis Blaydes versus Derek Lewis. And this fight is going to be an awesome heavyweight fight that we all love to see. Big swings, powerful men, giant 260-pound dudes beating the crap out of each other. But as far as the favorite, Curtis Blaydes is minus 400, minus 450 in some books. Unreal. Derek Lewis, he is that fighter that has beaten some of the best. Francis Ngannou, Volkov, right? He's also lost to people that he shouldn't have lost to, like Junior Dos Santos. The Latifi fight, he should have lost. I watched that fight and thought he lost that fight, but they gave him the win. Okay? He also lost to Daniel Cormier, and obviously Cormier was a great fighter before he retired. But at the same time, Curtis Blaydes only has two losses, and those are both to Francis Ngannou. And Ngannou, in my opinion, is the best heavyweight in the whole world. I know Stipe Miocic has the title, but I think Ngannou is a little bit better. Sorry, Stipe, I do. Now, what you're going to get with this fight is two things. Derek Lewis is either going to win by KO, or pretty much anything else is going to happen. And Derek Lewis being a plus 350 dog, it is not probable that he's going to win this fight at all. But the only way he does win his fights is by KO. Curtis Blaydes, he wins his fights by KO or decision most of the time, right? This is five rounds here. Now, this fight is telling you that it's not going to go to decision, because the fight going to decision is plus 250. The fight not going to decision is about minus 300, right? Minus 325 to be exactly. So this is telling you that Blaydes is probably going to win within the distance. And the price of Blaydes winning within the distance is minus 165. I'm not so sure about that. And the reason I'm not so sure about that is that Blaydes, when he steps up in competition, some of his wins have went the distance. Okay? His last fight against Alexander Volkov, who we just saw beat the crap out of Overeem, went to a five-round decision. And I watched the replays. I watched the fight a long time ago. Well, it was back in June, whatever. But the way he won was by takedowns. He kept taking them down. He was fine to win that way, right? When he fought Justin Willis back in 2019, he went to decision. He beat a couple other bums, including Junior Dos Santos, who never lasts by TKOs, KOs. But some of his fights, the recent ones, went to decision. So, can Derek Lewis last? Well, Derek Lewis did last against Latifi. He did win that fight in decision, but it was only three rounds. But When he fought Alexei Oleinik, that went to the second round. When he fought Blagoy Ivanov, it was decision, a split decision. He won that. So Francis Ngannou, when he won that, it went to decision. That was three rounds. But for a big guy, Derek Lewis doesn't look like he has gas. He's got some gas. And I think there's a chance that he can go to decision, which is plus 250. But if this fight does go to decision, I'm almost positive that he's not going to win it because Curtis Blaydes is a much better technical fighter. Okay? I mean, Curtis Blaydes knows how to grapple. His takedown average, 7 takedowns per 15 minutes. 7. It's pretty big. His takedown accuracy, 55%. His significant strikes landed per minute are 3.55 to Derek Lewis's 2.64. Derek Lewis throws haymakers. He throws haymakers, and if he hits, he can win. That's why he's such a hit-or-miss fighter, right? So the best thing that I can think of is that Blaydes might not want to get into it with Lewis as much. It might just try to play the grapple game to win. Blaydes does not submit people. He'll try to win this by points potentially, right? So my play for this is Derek Lewis at plus 450 to knock out Curtis Blaydes, TKO, KO, or DQ, and Curtis Blaydes wins by points or decision at plus 325, okay? So worst case scenario, if one of those hits, obviously one of those hits is not, is the Blaydes one, plus 225, you're getting huge plus money there. If Derek Lewis wins, it's plus 350 because you have to take away the bet that you made on Blaydes. So the way we're attacking this is that we are trying to fade the Curtis Blaydes wins inside the distance, which is minus 165, right? Where it's that against that, pretty much. I don't see any other outcomes. I don't see Derek Lewis winning by decision. If Derek Lewis gets there, Blaydes has a ton of takedowns, right? Blaydes is just too good of a fighter. I mean, obviously, I'll be going for Derek Lewis for the plus 350, but you have to look at this as one play. You can throw a half a unit on each side. I'm going to throw a unit on each side, right? But that's the way you have to look at it. This is one bet on two sides because you're getting plus money either way. So we're betting against Blaydes doing that. Now, if you really think that Blaydes is going to win within the distance, very possible. Derek Lewis could gas out. That's you're laying juice for that. Go ahead. Lay some juice for it. Very possible. But on the other end of the spectrum, Derek Lewis, he's beaten better fighters than Blaydes has beaten. Both of them beaten Volkov. Blaydes beat Junior Dos Santos, and that's one of Derek Lewis's bad losses. But Blaydes lost to Ngannou twice, and Lewis actually beat him. So there you go. The next fight we're going to take a look at, Caitlin Vieira versus Yana Kunitskaya. And Yana is a plus 225. Caitlin Vieira is minus 265. Yana, she's got a good record, 13-5. Caitlin Vieira is 11-1. Here's the deal. Caitlin is a big favorite, pretty big favorite here, right? Minus 280 because she only has one loss. But when I look at who she fought, it's not that impressive to me. I mean, she's a good fighter. She should be a favorite, but I don't think it should be that big of a favorite. Because Caitlin, when she got into the UFC, it was about 6 fights ago. She fought some girls I haven't heard of. You know, then she beat Ciara Eubanks. And Ciara Eubanks is pretty good, but that went to decision. She lost the fight before that against Irene Aldana by KO. Right? And then she won a few before that. You know, she's a pretty good fighter. She wins by submission 4 times, 2 KOs, 5 decisions. But when you look at Yana, she's the better technical fighter. I mean, how they match up, take a look here. Giannis is a better striker. She lands 4.49 significant strikes to Caitlin's 3.1. 54% accuracy to 36. Takedown average is the same at 2 takedowns per 15 minutes. Takedown accuracy is about the same at 53%. You know, Yana, I think she's in her 5 fights that she lost, 2 KOs, 2 submissions, and 1 decision. Well, she hasn't been submitted since 2017, and she's had a lot of fights. Who has she fought? Cyborg? Chris Cyborg? Okay. I'm okay with that loss right there, you know? That was her first fight when she got in the UFC, by the way, having to fight Cyborg. Then she wins 2 in a row. Then she loses to Aspen Ladd. And then she wins her next fight. You know, she's a pretty good fighter. And I don't see why she's this big of a dog when she's the better technical fighter. This is just one of those female fights that the dog is going to have a little bit more value than the favorite. So in my opinion, I think that Yana is live here. We're just going to throw a unit on it.
Well, it's a great day for me to whoop somebody's ass.
All right, my friends. Well, gave you some plus money dogs. Obviously, the chances are they might lose, but in the long run, as long as you're profitable taking dogs, that's the way to go. If you have any questions or want us to break down any fights for you or any college basketball games, feel free to tweet us at The Odds Breaker. Make sure you check in to our show, Better Odds Sports Betting, tomorrow about 1 o'clock, 1:15 Eastern Time. Tony George, Kyle Hunter. It's going to be a blast. Everyone, enjoy the fights, enjoy the college basketball this weekend, and go get some winners.